Life in an urban prison is the subject of the new HBO series Oz, which premiered this week. My guest is the series writer and co-creator Tom Fontana, who also co-created Homicide: Life on the Street. Oz is short for the Oswald Maximum Security Prison, located in a fictional state. The series focuses on the new experimental wing, nicknamed Emerald City, which is emphasizing rehabilitation over punishment. But even in this experimental wing, there's plenty of brutality. Guards beat prisoners. Prisoners psychologically and physically destroy each other. One of the characters is a white supremacist who has turned his new cellmate into his sex slave and tattooed a swastika on his behind. In this scene, the neo-Nazi has stolen his cellmate's family photos and is using the photos to further intimidate the scared newcomer.
You've got a lovely family. I'm amazed you haven't showed me these pictures before. Amazed and a little hurt. I hope you don't mind me finding these hidden underneath your mattress. Beautiful. My wife is dead. But I've got two sons. 17 and 16. Handsome f***ing kids, too. Good Aryan stock, you know? My sons are devoted to me. I am an icon to them because I went to prison for my beliefs. They would do anything I asked them to. Steal, maim, kill. Maybe I should have them go visit your family. Huh? Just a little friendly call? What do you think? My sons and your wife? My sons and your daughter?
I asked writer and producer Tom Fontana why he wanted to set his new series in the experimental wing of a maximum security prison.
I wanted to be able to juxtapose the old and the new, both in terms of the physical plant and also in terms of the ideas of redemption versus retribution. I'm trying not to make any judgments about it. I don't have a political agenda. I'm not advocating anything one way or the other. But I thought if I had two distinct environments in one place, it would allow the stories to have more kind of yin and yang to them, more range to them, as opposed to just saying, well, this is a hellhole or this is a nirvana. It's kind of a, you know, two worlds crashing together, and so therefore I think it creates more drama.
What kind of research did you do in prisons before writing the series?
I went to a number of prisons in various states all over the country. I talked to a lot of inmates and correctional officers. You know, what I was looking for was less stories. I wasn't going up to people, tell me the best, funniest anecdote you have being in prison. What I was doing was trying to just get a sense of the texture and the feeling of the place, to try to get if there was a common, you know, feeling to what it is to be locked up in a prison.
One of the characters in your series, Oz, is a white middle-class lawyer who is convicted of accidentally killing a girl while he was driving drunk.
Right.
And I'm wondering, is he supposed to be the middle class surrogate, the person that the white middle class identifies with?
Well, yes, definitely. He's there as a kind of a guide for us, though very quickly stops being the guide for us. But he is someone that you can hopefully, you know, the average white middle class HBO subscriber can look at and say, oh, wait a minute, I could be that guy. You know, I'm one drunk driving charge away from being this guy.
But wouldn't that guy not be in a maximum security prison?
Well, it depends. I mean, one of the reasons I've set the show in a non-existent state, in a vague and general state, is because I wanted to be able to not be tied to the specific laws of any particular state that really exists. With Homicide and St. Elsewhere, you know, Baltimore and Boston, I tried very hard to be true to that environment and not do things that you couldn't do in those cities. But with this, what I wanted to do was to be able to have the freedom. In the third episode, it's explained a little further that he was made an example of, and that is why they were harder on him than normally. Is it a stretch? I guess in a way it is. But for me, I don't mind doing that if I can get some deeper story going.
Now, do the actors in the series know their fates? Do they know if they're going to get killed or survive, how many episodes they're going to be in for?
Some do and some don't. Just because some of the actors I only had for a limited amount of time, so I tried to work the story to fit in their availability. But most of the actors are just, thank God for them, they're just going with it and trusting me. One character in particular, I had decided I was going to kill, and the script came out, and like everyone, the crew and the rest of the cast just rose in rebellion and said, no, you can't kill him. So I had to rewrite it so that he didn't die.
Wait, but so like the character too much?
They all liked the character too much, so.
Could you say who the character was?
Sure. It's Groves, the guy who ate his mother and was saving his father for Thanksgiving.
Oh, and what was so appealing about this character to the cast and crew?
I don't know, because he's not a particularly appealing character to me, but they all seemed to think he was they fell in love with him over the course of four episodes.
You've learned a lot about writing dramatic series with storylines that continue through different episodes, through your writing at St. Elsewhere and Homicide, and now, of course, in Oz. Is there anything you've tried to change in Oz about the nature of the plot lines and how they continue from episode to episode?
Well, I'll tell you, the one of the great liberating factors of doing the show on HBO is there are no commercials. And so instead of this awful pushing toward the act break, so you go to the commercial, so the audience comes back from the commercial. There's no forcing the drama every 12 minutes to try to create that false sense of danger or suspense or whatever. So that just losing that element has allowed me to tell the stories in a much more natural, the feeling of them is much more natural than for me than I've ever done before. Taken away the idea that we intermingling the stories, in the sense of that normally on most hour drama shows, you do an A story and a B story and maybe a C story, and you do one scene from the A story and then you cut to the scene from the B story and back to the A story and then maybe to the C story. With this, what I've done is it's like little short stories which are accumulate over the hour. So one story might be 30 minutes and the next story might be 1 minute and the next story might be 11 minutes. And so it's totally dictated by the drama and not by the structure of television.
You know, the first episode, as I was watching it, I was thinking, my God, listen to that language. I was thinking, this television, what's going on here? And I said, oh, right, it's cable, right? They can do that there. I mean, it's not that I was shocked by the language. I was shocked I was hearing it on television. And I'm wondering if this opens up things for you as a writer, if you feel like you can write more true to character because there aren't any restrictions on the language you're allowed to use.
Absolutely. People are defined in part by the way they speak. It demonstrates our level of education, our family upbringing, the neighborhood we come from, the part of the country we come from. I mean, all those elements make up a character. And so when you have characters, instead of being able to use words we can't use on television, to be able to have them say the words they would really use, it helps define and, I think, crystallize the characters so much better. So for me, it's only helped me write better to be able to write freely. Now, not every character in the show says bad words. You know, the Muslim, the black Muslim leader, Karim Saeed, never swears. Obviously, the nun played by Rita Moreno never swears, though the priest does. B.D. Wong's character, who plays the chaplain, he swears. So what I've tried to do is to say, okay, who is the character and what language would they use and how would they use it? You know, how limited are they in their language that they have to swear all the time? Or how often do they use it and the right word to be shocking?
Now, what about nudity? What are the parameters you're working with there?
None whatsoever. We have total freedom to use nudity whenever it's appropriate, and I've tried to be very conscious of that and not just throw it in for the sake of throwing it in.
It might be tempting to do that. I mean, let's face it, nudity does get ratings, and there's times on certain comedies on cable where I feel like the bare-breasted woman is there for very specific reasons. She's taking off her shirt because that helps get an audience.
Well, the joke around the set was because the show was set in a male prison that I had gotten as much female nudity in it as I have, but the one moment that happens is when a guy is looking out the window and his girlfriend is out there naked was actually based on a story that I read about where a guy prearranged with his girlfriend because he hadn't seen her in a while naked and she showed up on the lawn and danced around naked and then got in the car and walked away. So even that was based in reality.
I'm wondering what it was like for you when you visited prisons. On the one hand, you really needed to do that to make your stories credible. On the other hand, it must be kind of embarrassing to be the visiting guy from Hollywood or from, TV land who's going to come see what it's really like in prison.
Yeah.
It's almost like a cliche at this point.
Yeah, no, definitely. And those guys are so smart and they're so, they'll glad hand you as much as anybody in Hollywood will glad hand you. But the reality is they know exactly what the score is, and that's not a problem for them. I mean, it's so much of prison life is based on codes of ethics that exist that aren't necessarily, our code of ethics. And the key to it is if you respect another man's code of ethics, even if you don't agree with it, you're fine. But if you don't respect that their code of ethics, then there's going to be trouble. So I did feel a lot of times. I mean, my whole entire jail experience was in the '60s when I was arrested for civil disobedience during the Vietnam War. So, and I think I was there a weekend. Did the big weekend. So I did feel sometimes a little bit like I was, using them in a way that could be offensive. But the truth of it is that I think my approach to it has been very honest. So I don't think I'm not doing it to be exploitive. So I don't feel like I'm really using them that badly.
My guest is Tom Fontana, writer and co-creator of the new HBO series Oz. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back with Tom Fontana, writer and co-creator of the new HBO series Oz, set in the experimental wing of a maximum security prison. What kind of run-ins in your life have you had with cops or with criminals? Have you ever been victimized?
The severest thing I ever happened, I remember it was now years ago, but I had that weekend, it was Easter weekend, and I had just given this impassioned speech about how living in New York wasn't dangerous because you just got to be aware and you got to, walk a certain way and keep your eyes a certain way and nobody bothers with you if you don't bother with them. And the next day, I got hit on the head. It was like God said, "Oh, we'll show you, you stupid idiot." I got hit on the head. I was walking down the street over in the 50s on the West Side, and this guy came up from behind me, hit me with a bottle across my eye from the back and broke my glasses and I fell to the ground and I got up immediately and I was ready to, punch him and he ran away and I was bleeding profusely, but I was in such shock by the whole thing that the cops came and they wanted to take me to the hospital. I kept saying, no, I got to go home. I got to get my other glasses. I can't see anything. So they were like going, no, you really should go to the hospital. And I was like, no, I really want to go home. I got all the way home and my, my wife said, looked at me and like screamed because I was just bloodied, completely bloodied. And she put me in a cab and we went to the hospital. But that was like the biggest kind of like bizarre, random, you know, I've had my house broken into and all and those kind of things. But in terms of physical violence against me, and, you know, the thing about cops are that are great is that it depends on where they live, I mean, what city they're in. New York cops are just the most, they're just cool because they have a large amount of tolerance for all kinds of behavior. And then when the tolerance is finished, you know it's finished. They make it very clear to you that you have to stop. So I'm usually very respectful to the police when I'm in any kind of situation that that calls for me to come into contact with them. No, and obviously through homicide, I've made a lot of friends with cops over the last couple of years. So, which is ironic given the fact that in the 60s I was throwing rocks at them. So,
you're really casting your lot with television, it seems, as opposed to trying to skip to the other side of the tracks and do movies.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you can do everything it is you want to do in the setting of television?
No, I don't feel that, but I do feel that I'm lucky enough to be in a position where I'm allowed to get away with more than most people are who'd work in television. So I've never been wildly enamored of film. You know, I'm not one of these guys who says, "But what I really want to be doing is writing and directing a feature." I love television, and I love the potential of television even more. Television has such a capacity to embrace everyone and allow everyone a forum and an opportunity to watch things that appeal to them. I mean, I think it's a remarkable gift to be a part of that. And I don't want to walk away from it just because I can get a 3-picture deal at Fox.
In both Homicide and in Oz, you're dealing with pretty dark subject matter.
Mm-hmm.
Is that because that's what really drives you as a writer, an interest in that dark side? Or does it have more to do with what really works dramatically on television and, you know, what...
Well, I actually think it's a combination of the both. I think that television overall, in general, tends to trivialize the human struggle. We'll say, oh, tonight a very special show about alcoholism. And the whole show will be about, oh, he's in the depths of his alcoholism. And then by the end, in 46 minutes, he finds the truth. And I think that so trivializes the real struggle that people face, whether it's alcoholism or AIDS or whatever it is. My stuff is considered, I guess, darker because I'm less willing to say to the audience, oh, okay, it's going to be okay. Don't worry. There are people who, you know, as long as you live your life in a good way and blah 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 blah. I mean, I'm not belittling that. As I'm just saying is that I think of myself as giving the alternative story. You know, commercial television is always looking for heroes. And for me, heroicism doesn't come from victory. It comes from the nobility of the struggle, the ongoing struggle. I'm much more interested in the ongoing struggle to survive than I am in the happy 46-minute resolution of a problem.
Now, do you have any idea whether your series will go past the first 8 or 9 episodes?
No, I'm waiting to hear right now. I'm supposed to hear in the next couple of weeks whether or not we will be back and how many we'll make if we do come back. So,
now, is this going to affect how you wrap up the end of the first season?
No, we finished shooting already, so I've already thrown my fate to the wind here. What'll be interesting is how I get out of what I've done at the end of the 8th episode.
Well, you blow up the prison, but it's only a dream when it starts again next season. Well, Tom Fontana, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Tom Fontana is the writer and co-creator of the new series Oz. HBO is showing it Mondays at 11 p.m. Eastern Time. I'm Terry Gross.